Hello, photography lovers, and welcome to another episode of the Fashion Photography Podcast. Here, every Wednesday, we're providing you with different interviews with different photographers, stylists, makeup artists, and other people from the industry. And every other Friday, I'm giving you some tips and little tricks on how to have your sustainable photography business. My name is Virginia Y, and I am the host of the Fashion Photography Podcast. And of course, I'm also fashion advertising photographer for the past 12 plus years. I'm doing this podcast along with my partner in life and my soulmate, George. He's the producer of the podcast, and honestly, without him, it wouldn't have sounded the same. And you know, when we talk about podcasts, sound is everything. Or maybe it's not. Of course, the community is everything. And that's why we are doing a special portfolio review for you. Because the Fashion Photography Podcast has already been around for the past 5 years, and we want to celebrate you, because without you, this podcast wouldn't have been the same. So for each and everyone that is part of our newsletter, there is an opportunity for you to win a special portfolio review. That will happen next Monday on our YouTube channel. Of course, the YouTube channel is called The Fashion Photography Podcast. You guessed right. So for everybody who is not part of our newsletter, you can subscribe now on photographypodcast.net. There is a special button for you called Join Our Newsletter. Huh? What do you think about that? We're so clever with the copyright. So guys, in case you're not part of our newsletter, you get the chance to watch the special portfolio review live on YouTube. So definitely join us, because you can learn a lot of stuff just listening. And also, it's live, so you can also ask questions live in the comments. So I'll be waiting for you on YouTube, again, the Fashion Photography Podcast. And now let me tell you a little bit more about today's episode. So we released part one of this episode last Wednesday. So if you haven't checked it out, now is the time for you to do it, because in today's episode, we're moving forward, and that's why we are still talking about sustainable photography. But today we'll discuss what are the little steps that you can do to transform your work process into a sustainable one. Our guests today are going to share with us what's the impact of a photo shoot like that, the impact for the world, and the impact for them, so that we can learn together more about sustainability. But if you just want to learn a bit more about your career in particular, you can definitely do that here, because we are also talking about topics like, do you need an agent, or you actually need a mentor? What you can do to make sure that you're on the right track of your business. These and many more topics in today's episode, and I don't want to keep you waiting, so let's do that. So let's take a look at your website, Molly. Can you share with us your website?
MollyRose.co.uk.
Sam, can we also find it on your website?
Of course you can. It's samcarter.com.
Oh, awesome. So guys, there is this project that is called Plasticless, and these guys have done it together, and I would love to hear a little bit more about it.
I think Molly should start from where it all began.
Okay. Take the mic, Molly.
Holding the mic. It began one evening after two glasses of wine, just reading a couple of articles, reading a few books, and just finding the time to educate myself a little bit more on everything that was going on. It was, I think it must have been the time when Greta Thunberg was really sort of making an impression, a year and a half ago, I think. And I was really just, I wanted to learn more about it. And I was feeling increasingly overwhelmed at everything that I was reading, and feeling very much like I couldn't help in any way. You feel very small and powerless. And obviously, a lot of the problems come from the people in power and the big businesses. So I think it's very easy to find yourself shutting yourself off and burying your head and thinking, well, there's nothing that I could possibly do to help. But I just started reading kind of little ways that we can all make changes, and thinking about that myself. And they were just little facts and figures. Like I read one figure which is so crazy, and I love it, but obviously I hate it. But we use enough cling film in the UK alone annually to circle the world 30 times over. And I mean, that's just the UK, and that just staggered me. And you think, well, I really don't need to be using cling film. Like, there are so many other options you can use. I mean, they used to use banana leaves, they used to use fabric. Mm-hmm. Now we've got the access to beeswax wraps that are reusable, and there are so many other options that it really just doesn't need to happen. And I think I was kind of solving my overwhelmment by starting to educate myself more and acknowledging different ways that I could make small changes without really causing too much of a difference in my life at all, financially or like time in a time way. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where it started. I kind of put together a pitch very, very quickly in about an hour, and my very good friend Ellen Miller, who's a producer and ended up producing the shoot, came over for dinner that evening. And we've been talking for a while that we wanted to do something within the like eco-friendly remit. And this just seemed like a really great, simple way of kind of showcasing the ideas that I literally just learned to other people as well, because I just thought, well, if I've only just learned this and I'm feeling these feelings, I'm sure that there's other people that are too. So yeah, that's where it all began, really. And then it was around that time, as we were saying earlier, that then Sam and I did that sustainability shoot for Shortlist magazine. I think that was only a couple of weeks after this dinner with my friend. And so I suggested it to Sam that day. And from then on, we kind of worked as a three to get this project off the ground. Yeah, 6 months later, we shot it. And then it came out another 6 months later. Mm-hmm. It took a while. The thing is, so everyone obviously was doing this. It was a really big team, and everyone mm-hmm. did it just because they loved what we were doing. We got a really great eco-conscious team. Like, the hairstylists only used eco-friendly, plastic-free, or like minimal waste products. And so everybody, like the set designers, everyone there was doing it because they really wanted to do it. But obviously with that, there's no money involved, and it's just, we're all very busy and all doing all right in the industry. So we have to kind of just kind of slot in time as and where we could. And then I think especially with retouch and video grading and all that sort of stuff, it takes a while to fit it in around paid work.
Plus we can go more into the specifics of it, but I think we shot 12 green activists. So they're like influencers on Instagram, mm-hmm. Who are only talk about green, or like that's what they call green activists. And so trying to get 12 people in a room over 2 days to do this was tricky. And Ellen did an amazing job on producing it. But that was the trickiest thing, was trying to get everybody together in over the space of a weekend and do this. And we managed to do it. But yeah, like I said, it took a little bit longer than we thought, but with what we produced, and I mean, we can talk about that more now, but what we produced was something that I don't think any of us knew what we knew what we was going to achieve, but I don't think it exceeded what we was going to achieve beyond that.
So I was wondering, why did you decide to be on video?
Well, we decided to do both. So we decided to do both stills and video. Mm-hmm. I think video is very engaging nowadays. I'm starting to do more directing, and I really wanted to have a fun personal project that I could direct and kind of follow through from the very beginning to the very end. And there's only so much a still image can inform somebody. And what we found was, the video is like 3-4 minutes long. It's just like a short, fun, informative, like fashion style video, just to kind of take like the viewer through each change that we were promoting. So the stills would just have 12 images, and every eco activist would be kind of holding their change or engaging with their change. And then the video kind of talks through, say, what I just said about the cling film. It starts off with our amazing graphic designer, Harry Roberts, who did all the graphics and type for the video. And he did this amazing little world that was being circled and circled over and over by cling film. And it kind of talks through that fact. And then it moves on to, why don't you try this? And then you've got Tolly, who was our eco-activist for that one. And we had the wax wraps. Mm-hmm. And then the video just kind of moves it through like that. And again, it was just, we really wanted to inform the public on these little statistics that we'd found, but without frightening anyone or freaking anyone out, giving anyone eco-anxiety, and just to encourage progress, not perfection, which we made quite a strong point about in the video and in the stills, in the whole project, really. Like, the aim isn't to be 100% eco-friendly, because, I mean, really, I don't think that concept actually exists at all. I mean, our existence has a direct impact on the environment, but the aim is just to understand it more and to then reduce it where we can.
It's also just to break it down into a simpler format for people, where, like Molly said, when we both started looking at this sort of topic in a general form in our lives and questioning what we're doing, like Molly said, it's really overwhelming and it's really quite scary. And when you see all the media and it's constant, like Australia bushfires and all this sort of stuff, you're like, whoa, this is so much tough. What can we do? And it's literally is to break it down to a really simple format for the viewer and the reader to digest. Mm-hmm. And that's what we did with this. That's the whole aim of this project, was to break down the scariness of what's going on, and to sort of show alternatives of how you can make small little changes. Because even if you don't think that small little change will make a difference, if you and three others, which passed it on to somebody else and passed it on to somebody else, if you do that, you're going to save so much plastic, or you're going to save so much waste, or so much stuff. So I think it's really important that's why we did what we did.
Yeah, definitely. And the climate emergency just deserves far more media attention than we're giving it. So I think it was just so important to do it, have as much, many different types of media for this project as we possibly could, to try and get that information out there as much as we could and spread the word and get everybody sharing it, and then look forward to project two and project three.
Yes.
So we can expect more. But before that, tell me, what was the fact that amazed you the most when you were doing the research for this project? Maybe it was the same for both of you. Maybe there were two different facts.
I think the one we both, and you know what, I judge this on what my mum said, because she was quite shocked as soon as I said it, because she's always been an avid tea drinker, like drinks tea all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think as soon as I told her that in the UK alone, we drink 165 million tea bags a day, and 96% of those tea bags are sealed with plastic. And they go into your bin or into landfill. So that's 165 million tea bags, and 96% of them are going in. And it's quite scary. And when I told her that, she freaked out. She could literally completely changed her life.
I think that's the way moms act when they hear this fact. Yeah. Because my mother also freaked out.
You just can't comprehend that a tea bag could contain plastic, because it doesn't look like plastic.
And it's in the same way that anywhere.
All our clothes leak out micro plastic fibers when we wash them. Like, you don't, they're the sort of facts that get swept under the rug because they're not staring you in the face. I think chewing gum is another amazing one. Amazing, again, wrong word.
Amazingly bad, yeah.
Guys, if you feel lost right now, the fact is you need to watch the video in order to maybe understand part of our conversation. But these are some of the facts that are listed in the video and in the photo shoot that those two amazing people have created. And this is something that can make you really aware of what you do in your day life. And I think the best part is that you really don't have to do all of these things. And you probably do some of them without even knowing. For example, everybody knows that I'm a huge fan of ice cream. You will never see me eating an ice cream from a plastic cup. Simply because I love ice cream. I love everything about it. So I feel like I need to eat the whole ice cream on earth. So that's the reason why I've always ordered like this, how is it called?
The cone.
The wafer.
Yeah, the waffle. Yeah. So that's the reason why I've done this. But it turns out it's good for the planet.
Yeah, just because if you think, if you eat it from a wafer cone, every single part of that is gone. There's none left. So therefore, if you eat out of a plastic tub with a plastic spoon, where are you putting that? You're putting it in the bin most of the time, unless you recycle it. And most of the time, probably that tub or that spoon is not being able to be recycled. So just, I think it's about just thinking about literally every single thing that you encounter and what you purchase and what you buy and what you consume. It's just about thinking, and I think it's just about thinking differently and turning on its head. And once you start, you can't stop. And trust me, once we start doing this project, everything that comes into your life now, I think, and Molly would agree,
yeah,
we both question, do we need to buy that? What's the impact of that? And I think it just slowly starts to change your mentality. And that's what I feel that with this project, hopefully if we can just do that with however many people see this, then maybe we have made a difference in that way. And maybe we've saved 1,000 plastic tubs of ice cream being sold.
Yeah, sure. Also, that the actual project itself was a completely sustainable set. And considering that, I mean, Ellen did an amazing job, but considering that literally from every single aspect of how you would produce photography work completely sustainably is so difficult, and it shows how much work there still is to be done. But it really got us thinking even from then, and then from a shoot perspective of how much waste can be involved in doing photo shoots and creating art, and how it doesn't need to be that way, because we managed to do it on a very, very small budget without it.
Yeah,
and I think that's something that's really interesting now, like looking into the photography industry and how things are changing. And obviously there's so much negativity around, but there are also so many great businesses, production companies, individual freelancers that are really trying to be more sustainable within their work. Again, the word spreads. So say a lot of production companies don't have plastic water bottles on set anymore. It's quite common that you'll get given like a keep cup or a glass or something, and they'll stick a little bit of gaffer on it and write your name. And then it's not a case of when you've got 10 all plastic water bottles together and you don't know whose is whose, so you end up putting them all away and getting a new one. You've got your glass with your name on and you just keep refilling it. It's very obvious, but it makes a huge difference. And I think then when you're doing those things, it's explaining then on set why you're doing it. And then everyone goes, oh, yeah, okay. And then it's that simple, isn't it? It's just educating yourself, educating other people, and spreading the word, spreading ideas of how we can use what we already have to just reduce our waste.
I love this example, and I was thinking that maybe we can do another role play to think together how we can do a photo shoot more sustainable. I love the example with glass cups. I have also seen something else from my peers and my teams. People are usually, because especially when we shoot on location or in a studio, people are bringing their own water usually. And what they do, and what I have really loved so far, is seeing people bringing their own bottles. And it's like a liter bottle, but the bigger studios and almost all of the studios that I've been to have these jugs, and you can just fill water from like a regular water and it's going to filter it. So everybody can just fill up their bottles again. And I think that's so cool, because you're also not wasting constantly washing more and more cups. I think that's really, really cool. And this is my idea of making your photo shoot more sustainable. What are your ideas?
I think considering ways that you can give back to your local community with reusing what you already have. So say like scraps of Colorama that you've cut off, or the ends of Colorama.
I love that.
Giving it to like local schools for art projects or youth centres. Similarly, kind of paint from set builds. There's a lot of paint that gets chucked away, and there may be like a local community project going on around you. I mean, there's so much going on, especially when you're in a city, that it just takes a little bit of research and a little bit of thought. But just donating those kind of things instead of just chucking them, even if it's recycling, like a lot of recycling doesn't actually get recycled. And I think giving it a second home is quite fulfilling, and it's nice. It just takes more time and it takes more thought, but it's possible. So yeah, I'd say that's a big one for me.
You had the most time to think.
One thing that actually would definitely be is like catering and locally sourced catering. So like trying not getting your food mm-hmm. from one end of London to the other end just because you want a certain specific burrito, I don't know. But yeah. Like, but just making sure that you choose the right, like, I mean, obviously every now and then people have got different allergies and whatnot, but trying to really try and keep it local and fresh food is obviously always really good. And so much waste goes into things. So like being really efficient with what you do of that waste. And one thing I would say is if you do have food left over, just go and give it to someone, because there probably will be someone on the street that's homeless mm-hmm. or there will be someone that would need the food after as well. Just give it away. Don't chuck it in the bin, because it's such a waste. And there's so many things on set that go into the bin, and it's so scary of how much waste there is, especially with food. And with that, then make sure that the caterers or yourselves are not using like lots of plastic packaging and like crisps and all those sort of things, like just don't be chucking everything all in the bin. Think about where it's going, and maybe that's for a producer to have a recycling bin and also a non-recycling bin. And I think it's like those sort of things. So just it's really common sense, but it's like, just do it. Bring your own metal straw, like bring your own cutlery, so there's no plastic cutlery. They're little things that you can do when you can bring from home. It's so obvious, but it's also not many people think about it.
I'd say from a photography point of view, I saw this new studio that had opened up in London recently, and I think they're the first studio to do it. So I know this isn't very accessible yet, but it just shows what's coming and what people are starting to think about. But they have biodegradable poly boards. So they're grown out of fungi and painted in milk paints, and then they're completely biodegradable when they do end up going to waste, which I just thought was great. It's so innovative.
Love it.
Great, yeah. Isn't it?
It is.
And props being hired instead of bought. Most set designers do hire a lot anyway because it's cheaper. But I think when you're on bigger jobs, but then there's just budget, people just chuck money at props and just buy loads of stuff and loads of plastic packaging and loads of stuff from Amazon. And it's just, you can just go to a prop hire house, hire everything you need, no plastic whatsoever, and source it. I think that's a nice one, and more interesting as well, having props that have been on other sets and have other stories.
Do you think that this is changing in a way that maybe if tomorrow a client that is really connected to plastic comes to you, maybe you will really deeply think whether you want this project or not?
Maybe we could be in the position now where we could both say, I just want to check in about how, like, in terms of waste, plastic, that sort of thing. I wouldn't be scared to say that to a client now.
No,
I think that's important. And I think it's important to sort of question and challenge, because if I go into a new job now, I think it's key to me. If I turn up and there's plastic everywhere, I'd be horrified. And I know that can happen, and it probably will happen and carry on happening, but I think if you don't talk to the producer, and it's not about being, well, I know more than you, do you know more? It's not being that. I think it's just having a genuine conversation with them and saying, I just wanted to check if, do you do this and do you do that? Because I find that there's always a lot of waste. And sometimes maybe they haven't thought about that, and they're like, oh, such a good idea, we'll get reusable water bottles.
Half the time it's cheaper.
Yeah.
It really is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it's also
definitely
better for them in the eyes of the audience also. So this can be something that will really make them make the switch.
Mm-hmm.
Because nowadays it's so important because of the social media and everything. Everybody wants to be on top of their game and be good in front of their followers. So this can be a real game changer.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was wondering, how are your followers reacting to this project of yours?
I was really surprised at how many people that I didn't know started like messaging me and saying how interested they were in it. I really wasn't expecting it. I was kind of expecting all the people that I know and the activists that I've connected with and the people that I speak to that are also interested in it. It was quite a small pool to respect it and really like it. But I didn't, and we obviously had people sharing it and different platforms and stuff, so it reached a bigger audience, but I was still like, oh, okay, this is actually good. And I think we were so attached to it and we were so close to the project that we weren't sure if it was even good or not anymore. Speaking for myself. So it was refreshing, and like getting messages and saying like, oh, I didn't even think about this one, I'm not going to do that anymore. Yeah, I found the reactions really personable, and
it wasn't just in London either. Like I had people in around the UK, but also like internationally as well. Message, and I think that was really nice to sort of see other people that were engaging in it, but not just in London. Because I think sometimes wherever you live, you're always in that sort of your own bubble there,
yeah.
And you sort of forget that you're actually on Instagram or whatever platform you use, that you can reach a big audience. And I think that's important to remember that too. You have a platform, so mm-hmm. use it.
Yeah.
Sam, you mentioned that now you're signed with an agency. Was it before or after the project? The moment
this was off. It was after. So we shot the project in April last year, 2019, and then I mm-hmm. signed with my agency Stella Creative in September 2019.
What was their reaction on this project particularly?
They absolutely loved it, and it was I have another project I'm doing as well, which is I'm shooting a community down in Devon, and it's been going on for a space of a year, and it's a whole thing on sustainability and intergenerational relationships and how they feed into building a community together. And those two projects combined with the plastic Quest for Plastic Less and Chagford project, my agent said to me it gives me a point of difference in terms of not many people, and I mean there are stylists out there that are talking about it and using in their work, but for me, I'm so passionate about this subject and this whole overarching thing that I think it shines through, and when I start talking about it I can't stop. So I think you can just tell that I get excited by these sort of things, and this response so far from everything has been incredible, and people want to know more and they want to pick my brains on it. And so my agency, even though in the sense of like maybe they have not seen sort of stuff like this before, they my agent was absolutely enthralled by it.
They can see it going further as well.
Yeah, there's legs. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not just a one-off. Like, it's something that we can carry on doing.
And we will carry on doing for a long time.
Mm. Supporting myself, really.
She has me too, obviously.
And I have Sam.
That's awesome. I think it's really nice that you mentioned mentors, because I think there is a huge difference between those two. And I think people are really messing the two terms. I think that many people need actually a mentor instead of an agency, but they think and confuse the one with the other.
I'd agree, but then I also think an agent can also be your mentor in a way too.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think it's before I had the agent, before I signed with Stella, I was freelance for like 9 months by myself, and I was totally fine. It was great, it was going really well, but actually Stella's really enhanced my vision of where I see my work going, and they're really encouraging, and I speak to my agent every day, a few times a day, and so I think it's about finding the right agency, and that you might not need an agent and you can do it by yourself, but also at the same time it's also a really good thing as well. As I don't know,
Two sides. I think when it's right, it's right, and I think your agent is incredible. I mean, Sam's agent emails me lots arranging shoots with like Sam and other stylists that are on their books there, and almost gives me a bit of a kick up the backside in terms of editorials and getting on with that too. So I mean, I think Sam's super lucky with his agent.
How did it happen for great. You? How did you two meet?
My agent. So I had met quite a few last year, and like Molly had said, I just hadn't gelled with anybody really. And then I went in to meet Perry, who's the owner of Stella Creative, in July or August last year. And what was felt like it was supposed to be probably like a 20-minute chat turned out to be 2 hours. And as soon as I showed her Devon project and then also some of the plastic stuff as well, she just stopped and was like, I'm obsessed with this. Like, this is so, it's not something I've not seen before. And we just connected really well. And she actually really understood me creatively. And I think it was the first time someone had in terms of that dynamic. And so literally then the next day, she called me at like 8:30 in the morning, or was like, or texted me saying, are you up? And I was like, yeah. And then she called and was like, I've just been thinking about you all week, all night. I just need to represent you and I want to work with you. And then that was it really. Since then, it's been amazing.
Oh, that's so nice. I didn't know that.
So sweet, yeah.
That's so nice.
that's how it happened. I don't know. It just sort of happened really naturally and organically. And I think you'll know when you know. And I didn't realise I would know when I knew, and then I knew straight away it was that she was the one, or that agency was the right people for me.
What have changed ever since you have an agent?
I'm a lot more busier, more money. But no, I think mainly it's sort of been a really good lesson in, like Molly said, about handing over control, because for however long, even when I was at the magazines, I was still doing all my freelance work on the side. And I've done it for like 7 years by myself, and didn't need anybody to sort of manage my diary or get me jobs, things like that, because jobs have always come to me, and I've always been quite lucky in that, not lucky is the wrong word, but in that sense, I've always had things come through. So handing over control was quite scary, but actually at the same time, it's also just quite refreshing to sort of have someone to be able to manage stuff for you and sort of keep you on the right track. And self-motivation is a hard thing when you're fully freelance. I found like start of last year, it was tricky. I got made redundant from Shortlist because Shortlist magazine unfortunately closed down, and having to be put in a position where you have to make it yourself and be your own boss was quite scary, I would say. And it took I think I'm still getting used to it now, but just having an agent and someone just you can talk to, and like I talk to Coco every day and we talk about what's going on, what's next, life in general, and like what we've been up to. And it's actually just quite nice to have someone that sort of sets a bit of direction for you, and we have regular meetings. I mean, I know what's coming up and I know where I want to go and what photographers I want to shoot with and where I want to shoot and what I'm doing with the projects, and they're just really generally helpful in all that sort of aspect. So that's what having an agent is.
A good agent.
Is Molly a part of the list with photographers that you need to continue shoot with?
Oh my gosh, of course. That's not even a question.
Of course. I was just kidding. And Molly, I was wondering, Molly, you know what? You're one of the very, very few people that I've heard saying that they have a strong vision on when and where they want to go. So this is very interesting for me, and I would love to hear your tips for the people that are listening to a podcast. If they're lost, what they can do in order to make sure that they're on the right track.
I think it's a really difficult one. I think it comes from reflecting a lot on everything that you've achieved so far and what you're enjoying and what you're not enjoying. Like for me at uni, it was always, I mean, to be honest, since I was about 16, it was always, well, I want to be a photographer in this industry and that's what I want to do. So I need to get there. So I would have these steps planned out uni. I was assisting all the way through uni, so that then when I graduated, I moved up before I'd even graduated. I moved to London so I could carry on assisting, pay the rent, and then get into the industry more and more and more full time, so that then I could pretty much start shooting straight away. And there was always that very obvious goal. And I think a year or so ago, obviously I'd done a lot quite quickly, and I had to kind of then rethink what those goals were, because obviously I had so far to go, but from the goal of being in the industry and shooting a cover and shooting this, da, 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 it was, I'd kind of started doing it. And then I was like, okay, well, what's next? And I think that's when I really learned properly about reflecting and like mapping out where you were. I'd say setting goals for me is huge. I set goals every 3 months where I look back every quarter and reflect on what I've achieved, what work I've done, what money I've made, what I've enjoyed, what I haven't enjoyed briefly. And then I set the next goals for the next 3 months, sort of basing on that, whether that's financial goals or goals around testing, meeting new people, making new friends, like whatever it is, just those goals. So then I think a month is too short in this industry to judge how you've done, but a quarter is a really nice summary.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing I do. And I think then taking that further, doing sort of 5-year goals, and then they almost seem so unachievable when you write them down, but then kind of making little stepping stones back, tracing those back to where you are now. So say it's like, okay, well, I want to shoot, I don't know, a big campaign that's on the tube. What? How am I going to get there? And then it's looking, okay, well, all the steps back which will path you from where you are now to where you need to get there. So that could be, I mean, the first step could be walking around the tubes and writing down all the different campaigns that are on the tubes at that moment, so you can see what companies are actually paying to put their ads on the tubes. And then the second could be going through different contacts and networking, maybe shooting in a similar style to some of the campaigns just through tests where you could sort of see how a brand would then like what you're doing and see how it could relate to their campaigns. And just kind of masking out all these little steps, really, along with the three-month goals to really kind of progress you proactively, rather than just sort of having these goals and then time sort of catching up on you and you going, oh, hang on, what have I done? I think it's just, yeah, it sounds so cliche, but just being really present. I think for a while I was kind of really, I feel like for a while I was a bit asleep, and then you're like, oh, okay, I've woken up. I'm back in the room. I'm here. And I think staying as present as you can, as grounded as you can, not believing your own hype is a big one. I think when people are like saying that you're doing well or bigging you up, it's keeping yourself on the ground and actually addressing, seeing how you can always be better and always get better, because everybody can. And that's big.
What's the project that you wrote down, and once it happened, you could not believe that you have made it so far?
When I was about 13, me and my mum were walking along the beach, and we were sort of talking about photography. I'd just won like a tiny little competition within my school for photography. And I was kind of like, yeah, I really like it, but I don't know how I could ever make any money from it. And mum started explaining.
You were,
well,
13. Seriously? Yeah. I love that.
Well, I didn't understand how you could make money in photography. And my mum sort of explained, well, imagine kind of I'd think, well, I don't know, like a photo of a beach, like how could I make money from that? And mum would say, well, what about if it was a Nike boot kicking a football across the beach, and then that's a Nike campaign? And I was like, oh yeah, okay, that makes sense. I can see how that would work. That would be cool. Like, and blah, 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 blah. And then a couple of years ago, I shot some stuff for Nike, which was fab. And I think that was a moment for me where I thought, oh, that's gone full circle. That worked.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's a great story.
Forecasting it forward.
It's a little bit weird that you have had thoughts like this when you were 13. But to me, it seems like you'll be doing great in just a couple of years in terms of money. And maybe you're doing great even today.
Yeah, I'm doing fine.
That's awesome. And this is a question for both of you. Do you reach out to clients personally, and how do you do that?
Not so much anymore.
I wouldn't say personally. Like, now that I have an agent, I sort of give her a list of brands that I want to shoot for. If you know contacts there, or you know people that shoot for them, whatever, then connect with those people, because they're the ones that are going to get you in the door. Because it's all about who, in terms of a lot of the stuff, it's who you know in the right place at the right time. Obviously, you've got to have the talent and to be able to back it up. But a lot of the time, the way I came into this industry was through a contact that I knew for a friend. So it's always about that. But I wouldn't say reaching out personally to brands. I don't know.
No, I mean, I used to, but now not really. No, I mean, I think when you're quiet, then that's quite a good time to just send a few follow-ups, maybe with brands that you've worked with before. But most of the time, there's not really time.
No. And a lot of the time as well, a lot of the brands get big production companies to do all the production on the shoots or creatively. So it's also about reaching out to production companies.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
freelance producers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's great. And for the end of this interview, I would like to ask you the question that I love the most. I'm not asking everyone, so you're privileged. But what would you do if you have to start your career today? What would be your steps? And this is going to be your example, but it's also going to really, really help the people that are figuring out their way right now.
I would say, from a stylist, I think it's really important to go and assist. And you need to start assisting. I think I learned everything from my first mentor, and he was like the creative director of Wonderland at the time. And I started assisting him on weekends and started working on other shoots. And then I learned everything I did really fundamentally from him and learned how everything worked, because I hadn't had a fashion background. I didn't know what PR was. I didn't know any. I didn't know much. I knew I loved fashion and I knew I was interested in the shoots and creating imagery and things like that. But I didn't know half of the stuff that I do. But I would say, if there's someone that you love and you adore and you're a fan of their work, message and keep messaging, and don't be scared to stop messaging, because you're the only person that can be like in control of your destiny, of where you go in your career. And you're the only one that makes the changes in that. So I think, for example, if you're a photographer and you want to work and you want to assist a photographer, keep messaging that photographer, and eventually you'll work with them. Like, even though it might sound like a bit of a stalker, but I think it's really important to work with or under the people that you will love creatively and that you aspire to sort of be in that sense. That's how I would say to start.
Yeah, I would 100% agree with you in terms of assisting. Literally similar story. I assisted one person in particular who was incredible. I learned so much from him in a very short amount of time. We still talk all the time. I still ring him for advice. And it's just so invaluable when you can actually get somebody who will take you on and you'll work very hard in return. Controversial opinion on messaging people. I cannot stand it when people DM me asking to assist me. It annoys me so much. I'm like, don't be lazy.
No, email,
and then even a couple of emails, maybe then phone. Like, I have a folder of assistants, and when I sort of have my usuals, but then if I need an extra pair of hands, and that's normally when you sort of have a test day and meet someone for the first time. Most people emailing to assist are like really starting out, so normally they'll want a bit of a work experience day or so. That's when I'll get someone in, but I will never go on Instagram, because DMs that just get lost, and you just have your folder there. I think even ringing people after, unless they like, don't hound them, but I think a nice call can actually be really refreshing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, passionately do not DM people.
I think it's very lovely that we can actually see both of your very different answers in terms of DMs and emails, mm-hmm. which is so great, because this means that there is a way to for everyone. If people prefer DMing, they can try. They will not succeed with everyone. Mm-hmm. However, it won't be a lost experience, right?
No, yeah. I agree. But I also think with Molly, like, emailing and then like sending like your CV, or just be generally being like really trying to be engaged in that person's work, like obviously saying that you love their work is very important, mm-hmm. but also just sort of
why,
yeah,
like why, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Not just like, oh, I love your work, can I assist you? It's like, well, okay, but tell me something about you. What are you, are you going to be fun on set? Are we going to get on? Like, do you know what I mean? You need to sort of know from them a bit more about them and what they're like, without an essay, obviously. Just a bit more personality than like mm-hmm. an email you can just send to everybody.
And what I did with my assistant that I have now is I did some meetings when I joined the agency, and I had like 3 or 4 meetings with different new assistants, and then I found my assistant that I have now, and she's incredible. But I think it's then going and meeting that person and seeing whether you'll get on. And like Molly said, she might do a test day, whereas with me, sometimes if I've got a big shoot, I'll get a couple of other assistants if I need them, and I'll sort of trial those people out. And I think it's just about trial and error. Like, you might go and you might like love that person's work, but then work for them like horrible, so then you might not want to do, you might not want to go and assist
them. Yeah, it works both ways. Really works both ways, yeah.
I love that.
But I think, yeah, ultimately the goal is go and assist, and don't think you can just, don't run before you walk, is mm-hmm. that the saying? Because I think so many people think that I'll go and assist on one shoot and then I'll be a stylist. And it's like, no. Doesn't matter that.
The very fact that we are 3 people here and the 3 of us have assisted before starting their career, I think it says a lot.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much for helping us to figure out the easy way to something very hard, and for also showing us that there is a possibility in everything. And we just have to think about it in order to make it more sustainable, but also funnier and better. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. And just one last thing is, like, just like Molly said, is think progress, not perfection.
I love
it. And that's
it.
What I think that we'd say.
Yeah.
Wise final words. Thank you guys so much. It was so amazing, not just to interview you, but also to get to know you a little.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure too.
This was the last part of our interview with these amazing guests. I really, really hope that you truly loved it and you can go and follow them on Instagram. You can, of course, also follow us, photography_podcast. This is our handle on Instagram. And guys, before I say I'm going to see you next Wednesday, I want to say I'm going to see you on Monday during our special portfolio review on YouTube. The Fashion Photography Podcast on YouTube. Yeah, I'll see you on Monday.